Push on a pedal, push on a pedal, get ya hot started. Push on a pedal, push it down and up again. Push on a pedal, push on a pedal, get ya hot started. Push on a pedal, push it down and up again. Get on your bike, sit on the seat, push your feet on the pedal, and ride it all around, ride it all around. Get on your bike, sit on the seat, push your feet on the pedal, and ride it all around, ride it all around.
Transportation meeting here on the DVD.
Yeah. I think what we're going to talk about, I think we're robot record. Robot said, Alex Thompson, what Robot said about LACC and LADAC not being construed as the full representation of the community is very brave and completely accurate. The community is much broader than that. Patrick Miller alluded to the fact that the low-hanging fruit in Los Angeles is not bicycle. It's very easy to get caught up in bicycle infrastructure. That's sort of like the paycheck the city gives to the community. We sort of like our measure of self-worth, how much money we spend on infrastructure. But really, take a look at Amsterdam, post-war, right after war, and now. They have tremendous infrastructure now, and they have ridership levels about 30 to 40%. But post-war, the numbers were higher than that, and they had no bicycle infrastructure. The difference is cultural. There was respect and value.
So the Cyclist Bill of Rights was one of the first things this group did. Alex Thompson, Mikey Wally, Eric Knutson all participated and contributed and are the co-authors. But essentially it's not a wild claim to any strange rights. They're all pretty much standard rights that exist either in federal, state, county, city law, or their policies of those, same municipal powers. And so, anyway, so as Jim was saying, the Cyclist Bill of Rights, and there are 12 of them, just like the original proposed Bill of Rights for the United States of America. Did you know it was originally 12?
No.
See, this is an educational opportunity as well as a claim to the rights of cyclists. The first one is simply the right to travel safely and free of fear. And as Councilman Rosendahl would say, that's simply a no-brainer, and that should apply to anybody. Why we have to articulate the fact that we should be safe and free of fear is speaks volumes to the circumstances in which we ride. The second one is the right to equal access to our public streets and to sufficient and significant road space. And again, that's codified in California Vehicle Code. Cyclists have the right to the full support of educated law enforcement. LAPD is under consent decree, federal consent decree. The idea that we have to ask for educated law enforcement is speaks, again, volumes to the circumstances within which we ride. Chief Pacinger showed up yesterday to argue for the bicycle license law, the efficacy and efficiency of the bicycle license law, which just demonstrated how far from reality sometimes law enforcement is, because in this particular case, that law is even in even contradicts state law. So it's an unenforceable law. Well, the bicycle license law says that the city of Los Angeles has the right to require all cyclists to ride with a bike license. State law says all residents. You don't get to exceed state law. There's a California Vehicle Code 21 is the state uniformity code. Municipalities have to operate within the guidelines established by the state of California. You don't get to exceed them simply because you want to. So poorly written laws are just simply unenforceable. They're used as weapons, though. You know, the pedal laws. Mikey Wally got a ticket for having the wrong kind of pedals. In other words, this is when there's nothing left to give you a ticket for, let's take a look at your bike license and pedals. Is the kind of...
But you'd almost have to be an educated cop to know to say...
Well, they pull out the book and start looking for things when they run out of things to ticket you for. And so sometimes it was something so simple as we saw a group of cyclists, so we pulled them over. Because after all, a group of cyclists late at night is a strange phenomenon in L.A. It must be worthy of... Anyway, so... That was one of them. Cyclists have the right to the full support of our judicial system and the right to expect that those who endanger, injure, or kill cyclists be dealt with to the full extent of the law. And again, this is something we deal with all the time with, just asking for us to be treated like all those. You know, if you key a car, you're in greater danger of being arrested than if you run over a cyclist. And I don't think I'm exaggerating there. Cyclists have the right to routine accommodations in all roadway projects and improvements. In other words, quite simply, if they're going to be working on the street, they should leave it as good or better. Be good campers. But in the ride over here, I came down some side streets here, and every time they cut up the road, they leave this little treacherous dip of soft asphalt. So you're always dodging any roadway improvements or DWP work. Anyway, that's a standard. Cyclists have the right to urban and roadway planning, development, and design that enable and support safe cycling. Cyclists have the right to traffic signals, signage, and maintenance standards that enable and support safe cycling. If they just cleaned the gutter lane on Western, just a well-maintained street would go a long way to making it a better place to ride. We zig and zag sometimes, which is unsafe for us, and it's dodgy for the cars, simply because our streets are so poorly maintained. And then, of course, we reach traffic signals that don't recognize the presence of cyclists. So theoretically, and I get a ticket at 7 o'clock in the morning on Hollywood Boulevard, deserted, when I went through a red light that wouldn't trip for me. And then the CHP, it just wouldn't trip, you know, because it didn't recognize. So I beat the ticket, but then, of course, I have to go to the effort of paying a ticket and then getting my money back and winning. And so that's a simple claim to our street should be designed for cyclists as well as all the other users. Cyclists have the right to be actively engaged as a constituent group in the organization and administration of our communities. Oftentimes, our leadership recognizes geographical representatives, like you live in this neighborhood, you live in that neighborhood, but they don't represent user groups. So the idea that a mobile constituent group, simply those that are road users, be represented is a novel idea, but not a strange claim. Cyclists have the right to full access for themselves and their bicycles on all mass transit with no limitations. Our city supported that just recently, and in fact, the Metro was revising the seating arrangement on the Metro lines to accommodate bicycles more efficiently, because right now we compete for space, a load of seats, and they're going to reorganize it so there's a place for a well-organized and labeled place for cyclists. End-of-trip amenities, simply a place to park. And then, of course, the 11th and 12th are simply the Fourth Amendment and the First Amendment. And so we went ahead and threw those in there because they're relevant and in many occasions.
What are the...
Well, for example, Fourth Amendment, the right to be secure in your persons and property. A cyclist was hit over in Rosendahl's district. If you were hit when you were in a car that impounded the car, it would be actually treated as if, well, it's got a VIN number. Cyclists have their bikes taken, and they're not even treated like it's real property. Cyclists on private property, if you parked a car, you wouldn't expect the your bike to, your car to disappear. In other words, there's a process, and they acknowledge that it's real property. Bikes disappear even at Hollywood and Highland in the parking lot when security cuts the locks and just they just disappear. Why? Well, we didn't like where you parked it. So I don't know why it is that with cyclists, sometimes the idea that the right to search and see, you know, and seize your property simply because you're riding a bicycle, even at City Hall, it's strange. We got searched three times. You know, here come the cyclists. And so that's one that we just bring up. That DWP, when we go to the meetings there, others will walk in, but the cyclists will have their bags inspected as if they might be bringing tire tools and changing tires without permission.
Almost like it's a cycling jihad. We're, we're sneaking into your meetings here.
That's right.
What do you think is the most important, or the couple of most important, amendments? The most important amendments.
What are the most important amendments, and are the most important rights in your view here, Stephen?
I'd say number one, the right to travel safely and free of fear, and essentially. That lays down the fact that we're equals to everybody else on the road. And the idea that any one group could compromise the safety of another group is just unbelievable in this day and age. So I'd lay down that the essence of all of this is the notion of equality.
Which ones do the LA DOT want to change, take out? And why don't they just want to put it in a master plan like that? It's well written. It's understandable. And even the lawyer... At the meeting said, well, I don't think there's a lot wrong with it.
That's kind of a funny one. You know, the LADOT didn't like the idea of us asking for accommodations on mass transit, saying that they have no jurisdiction. And the two things are, one, who cares what jurisdiction they have? We're not asking for the DOT's blessing. We're actually claiming these rights. The second thing is DOT does have mass transit. They also took out traffic signals and signage. They took out, and here's the best one. The DOT said that the cyclists claiming the right to the full support of our judicial system was an inappropriate claim. So it speaks volumes to their attitude, to the integration of cyclists into the larger gestalt of transportation in the city of L.A. And this thing's been around for since the beginning of the year, and for them not to have had a chance to give it a pass with regard to legal advice is unbelievable. It's a one-page document.
So what?
All right. Put him on the phone. Alex, which Alex? Thompson?
Yeah, Alex.
Hey.
He's on the phone. All right, so somebody has to talk to him on the phone.
Hey, Alex, how you doing here?
All right, how are you?
Good. Are you, you listening to this at all?
No.
Okay.
Right now,
we're in the middle of the Cyclist Bill of Rights, and just wanted to see how you feel about that. This is Jim C. here. Hi.
Hey, Jim C., what's up?
Not much, man.
Am I on?
You're on. You're live, right. So your opinion matters here.
Well, I'm really glad that the Transportation Committee is considering, you know, adopting it or endorsing it. We're not really sure what the language is yet, whether it's going to be endorsed, adopt, whatever. But it's great because, you know, we're having a lot of trouble getting any kind of progress with bicycle infrastructure in the city. And it's kind of a blessing that we're having that problem because I don't think our big problem as cyclists is the lack of bike lanes. Because we all, you know, we all ride the street. And I think it's important to remember that there are bicycle-friendly places in the world where there's not a lot of bike lanes. Where the reason they're bike-friendly is that people respect cyclists.
Yeah.
And that's what the Cyclist Bill of Rights is all about. It's about respect and codifying the various aspects of respect that we're supposed to have, but don't. I'm pretty geeked, and I think everybody at the meeting was geeked, too.
Have you noticed growing support for this lately?
Well, we kind of, like, we put it on the back burner for a little while, but, yeah, I was surprised when we brought it up and we're like, hey, it's going to be in Transportation Committee. Everybody was super psyched about it. you know, Roadblock was like just super, super enthused about it. And he did a really cool thing in the meeting too, where he kind of called out some of the malfeasance going on.
Now, this is what's interesting here is I'm hearing two words thrown around this morning: master plan, and it's something that we briefly brought up last week in the on the show. But what is the master plan, and how does the Cyclist Bill of Rights fit into this?
Right now, we don't know if the Cyclist Bill of Rights will have a role in the master plan. The master plan is just that. It's a plan. It's the big plan. It's the master plan, and it lays out the strategic vision. So the state requires that you have certain kinds of master plans for your city. There has to be like a housing master plan and a water master plan, and you also have to have a transportation master plan. And one element of the transportation master plan is the bicycle master plan. But, you know, in the end, it's just a plan. And if you go back and you look at the bicycle master plan that was originally written for the city of L.A., the first one in 1996, and then the second one in 2002, they're awesome plans. They're great. If everything in that plan had taken place, or even half of it had taken place, this would be a bicycle utopia. But the Los Angeles Department of Transportation, which is responsible for implementing everything in that plan, they haven't really gone forward with it. So it's always important when people talk about the master plan to remember that it's a plan.
Yeah, right. And then after the plan's made, who is responsible? You said the DOT is responsible for its implementation, but I think that we're going to see, hopefully, more people holding DOT responsible and accountable for what's going on.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that. In July, when there was this bicycle-themed transportation committee meeting, Councilman Alarcon really went after the Department of Transportation. And we've seen Wendy Gruhl, who's the chair of the committee, Councilwoman Wendy Gruhl, kind of go after DOT. We've seen Rosendahl do it a little bit, and also Levon. So I think that there's some frustration with DOT. But I'm a little worried because I also hear that the council people always have trouble with DOT, that DOT is kind of resistant to what council people want done, not just on bikes, but in general. So we have to find some way to keep pushing as a community.
Alex, do you want to tell us maybe a little bit about yourself?
Just like my intro?
Yeah.
No, there was a good point there. I mean, the DOT
sure.
handles the money and distributes the money within itself.
I co-founded Bike Rave, which is the West Side analog to Bike Kitchen. It's really young. It's only been around for almost 2 years. And right now, I don't really do too much at Bike Rave anymore. I volunteer there, but I keep a blog at Westside Bikeside, and that's kind of my main steez publicly. And then I organize a bunch of rides on the West Side. So I'm kind of this West Side guy, you know?
West Side?
Like, yeah.
All right. Alex, let's see here. I had Veronica who wanted to make a point here on the about the DOT,
how they manage the money.
Jump back into that. But one more time,
but
your blog is Westside.
Right?
Westside Bike Side.
Okay, right on. I'm gonna hand you over to her. Let's see what her question is here, and whether or not we can effectively answer it.
Right, talking to you, Jesse.
Well, I mean, I've heard talk that there should be some way to get rid of the. Well, I don't think you get rid of the LADOT, but you could get another. Entity to handle the money and then distribute the money to DOT, because DOT, they actually get the money and distribute it. So that's why the bicycling fund doesn't get any money, because they give it all to traffic and whatever they decide. And whatever's left over, if there is any, gets to bicycling, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, when you get money for a transportation project, usually it's a lot of federal money. So what the city's trying to do is get federal money. And then the federal money, they don't just throw it at you. They give it to you for a specific purpose. But Stephen could really give you a better answer for strategy for, you know, improving DOT's compliance. So you might ask him.
Yeah, he's right here.
There's a load of money available for bikeways amenities. It comes from the federal government.
It comes from the state government. It comes through Caltrans' hands. It comes through the Metro's hands. What's missing is the political will to drive our city to apply for good money and to put it to good use. For example, there's a fund called the Bicycle Transportation Account, and the city of L.A. scored $1.25 million in bikeways funding, which sounds like a lot of money. You could buy a lot of paint and keep Captain Chero's working for a long time. So the city of L.A. took that $250,000, $1.25 million, and it's applied to a bridge widening project to accommodate an on-ramp to the freeway over the Fletcher Bridge. So, in other words, bikeways money gets used for things other than bikeways, and that would end up becoming a lane that would have to be crossed, an on-ramp to a freeway that would have to be crossed by cyclists. The Fletcher Bridge now is, in fact, there was a little bike lane painted on the Fletcher Bridge, and the DOT went to great lengths to get out there the next day to make sure that it disappeared, because after all, and that demonstrates their attitude to bikeways amenities.
Stephen, are you saying that all this money was basically, it was earmarked for bike projects, but it was ultimately used to do road projects for cars?
Well, yes. You get, it's not uncommon to cobble together funding from different sources. It's just that bikeways funding gets cobbled together by a department that demonstrated yesterday its attitudes towards cyclists when Michael Ueno, who's the head of funding, said out loud in a public place, which was kind of shocking, that one reason he's concerned about Chero's is that they might inhibit the free flow of automobiles, and that could cause traffic congestion. Oh, Chero's are a lane marking. It's two chevrons over the symbol of a bicycle, and it's to indicate the proper lane placement, if you will, or to reaffirm that cyclists would be appropriately placed in that particular lane. So it's a message for cyclists to encourage them to get out of the door zone and ride in the lane. It also reaffirms to cyclists that, to motorists, that a cyclist in this particular lane is not considered a strange or illegal activity, much to the dismay of some of the motorists.
Do you know of any places that actively use Chero's now?
Many of your evolved communities, such as San Francisco, is littered with them, and other communities like that where the cyclist is actually treated like a member of society with some of the rights and rules that go with that. So I think UCLA even uses them because they're perhaps close to seceding from the union and forming their own government that includes cyclists with some rights to ride on the streets. Pasadena. And so you see, while L.A. yesterday said that they would like to engage in some more studies, because one of the things that the Department of Transportation does well is study things. It's been studying Chero's for a couple of years, and they're going to then have some meetings to plan another series of studies. And at one point, Wendy Gruhl said, less studies, more work. She's the chair of the Transportation Committee and the council member from District 2 in the Valley. And so keep in mind that when a group of scallywags got together with a bucket of paint, Chero's went down in a couple of communities that night. So if I don't think there's any strange science to a street, some chevrons, a bit of paint.
So it's easy for some dang kids to go out there and just paint the street up and get stuff done, but we can't get our government to go out and do it. It's basically
That's
what's
right.
going on.
I think that we would be better off hiring some kids, as you say, to run the transportation department.
But then again, this is government of and for and by the people, so it's a legitimate governmental situation for us to go ahead and paint these things on the street. So why the reticence?
Yeah, this is Eric Knutson from the Bike Riders Collective and the L.A. County Bicycle Coalition, and I'm stepping in here late and drove up in my Hummer, jumped out, I think yesterday was a really momentous meeting, and it seemed to be a turning point for me. And we need to send out a prop to Mr. Box and NC, I think, for largely
thanks
being
a
responsible
lot, guys.
For getting that momentum going in that room yesterday. But, you know, what we saw was the city council really beginning to listen to us. And when I went in to speak at a transportation subcommittee meeting maybe 2 years ago, Councilman Parks was sleeping, and the council was largely unresponsive, and we saw a real change yesterday. But what we also saw, and what a lot of people are noting this morning, is that we saw two city departments, the LAPD and the LADOT, who don't seem to answer to the council, to the people, to anyone. They seem to be speaking for themselves. And so I think that's really important that we all keep up the momentum that we started yesterday and keep going to these meetings and keep on the LADOT and the LAPD to make the changes that we need to make this a more livable city. Because if we pointed out, you know, there's sheroes in San Francisco, there's sheroes in Portland and other places, and LA is way behind, and we have a lot of work to do, and the work has only just begun. But I thought yesterday was a really, really great day for the city of Los Angeles, for cycling, and for everyone.
Real quick question for you, Eric. How long have you been attending the transportation meetings?
Those transportation subcommittee meetings, I know Stephen will have to help me out here. You have a better memory than I do. Was it 2006, I think, that we came? And I can't even, we were speaking actually about the bike master plan, was it? Funding for the, that's right, the call for projects. And that Fletcher Bridge thing, that sort of shell game that a DOT plays with money, where they'll apply for bike funding and then use it for something else.
That's a really good thing to be doing, this is to get the money flowing towards us. Another aspect that that the enlightened state of Idaho, the enlightened state of Idaho, has seen fit to have cyclists treat stop signs as a yield sign, and they're to treat a traffic signal as a stop sign. This makes a lot of sense. A bicycle weighs virtually nothing. Its stopping and turning distances are minuscule and minute in relationship to the very cumbersome and unmaneuverable automobile. And so we need to push for this sort of an expanded awareness of bicycles and what bicycles really mean and can and cannot do. I actually find that the police in the city of Los Angeles ignore me. Last night, I rode my bicycle. I came off Selma, which is closed at Vine due to construction, off the sidewalk. And I turned, basically I made a left turn onto Selma again through Vine because, you know, bicycles are so maneuverable. And there was a cop waiting to turn left, and I turned. I went in front of him because the hole in the gap was so much bigger for me than him. So then I ran the red light again at the next street west of that,
yeah.
Right in front of him, and they don't pay any attention to me personally. I don't know if I'm just I don't know if it's because I.
Real quick here, guys, I do want to get Alex's last words here. I know that he has some stuff that he wants to say.
Is he up?
Alex, you want to sure. Jump back in here and...
I just wanted to add something to what Eric was saying, or sort of respond. I think Eric hit it spot on. We've got a city where we're kind of sick as a city. There's a couple of departments that are really important that don't even respond to the politicians. And, you know, they're a representative government. Those departments should respond to them. So we have to remember, as a community, we've got to keep doing all these cool things we figured out how to do to make cycling fun and safe without the help of the city. You know, what the symbiosis over on Heliotrope between Bike Kitchen and Orange 20 and Scoops and Pure Luck, that's awesome. We've got to keep that going. This weird symbiosis that's occurring between Midnight Riders and political activism, we got to keep that going. We got to keep taking care of ourselves as a community and do it ourselves, because we can't wait for the city to be reformed. So I just wanted to make that point, and I'll talk to y'all later.
Thanks a lot for the call, Alex.
Nice talking to you, Jesse.
Don't we also got to push for bike paths?
That's the very least. That's the very least.
Bicycle paths... Sheroes,
do it yourself.
DIY, DIT, do it together.
The next Midnight Riders is born. The next ride was born yesterday because of the Sharrows. It's going to be what, cheap and easy, because Sharrows are cheap and easy, and that's the theme of the next Midnight Riders ride. I think we're going to do some Sharrows on the next Midnight Riders.
Well, oh, you know, when the subject of the Sharrows came up, one of the things that was pointed out is that oftentimes one of the simplest ways to for the Department of Transportation to set themselves up to do nothing is to focus on something that's so far down the road that they're able to ignore all of the low-hanging fruit. In other words, educated law enforcement, we could start right now. Sharrows, done by the weekend. You know, there are so many things that we could do quickly and effectively that would have a tremendous impact in encouraging cyclists and educating motorists and creating an environment in our communities where everybody feels comfortable, whether you ride a bus, walk, ride a bicycle, drive a car. Because one of the things that, even for motorists, and I try to empathize, confusion is a bad thing, just not knowing what's going on. And I think that sometimes our streets are just congested, well, traffic sewers, eh? And they're confusing, and it'd be great if motorists knew what we were doing and if we knew what they were doing and if we could all just get along. After all, we share the curb lane with buses that are going 14 and a half miles an hour. Crosstown never changes. So there's nothing unpredictable sometimes about that huge bus that's coming down, yet they act like they've never seen a cyclist before. So in that sense, if we could just agree and negotiate how we're going to share all this space, and that's simple low-hanging fruit that doesn't require billions of dollars of infrastructure, which is nice to work towards, but we should be able to accomplish some of the immediate goals, in the immediate.
There's another aspect of the roads in Los Angeles. Is this one up?
Keep going.
The roads in Los Angeles? Is this?
Yeah.
Okay, the roads in Los Angeles are built on a grid. And generally, if you can have a colloquial conversation about traveling around Los Angeles, you know, the names of the streets and things like Beverly or Western or, you know, streets we know the names of are streets that you do not want to ride your bicycle on. There's a street parallel to that street that nobody knows the name of, and you can ride your bicycle on these streets. They're open and empty, and by delineating those paths with a simple mark of some sort, more people can understand how to do that and how to move across town and get from here to there without being on the streets that the cars are on. Those streets are congested, dangerous, smoggy, generally don't look very pretty, and we really need to find a way to encourage more cycling, and eventually we'll be able to supplant the automobile, and these giant boulevards that are the more direct routes will by default go to buses and bicycles instead of these crazy cars we've got around us here. So that's a strategy that we can employ gently and without making a fuss. It's a quiet, subversive kind of gentle way to use your bicycle.
I can say something. We can listen to our caller. All right. So, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a real opportunity to take some of these quieter streets and make them into not only just delineate them, but make them into bicycle boulevards to calm the traffic further and to make this the network that we'd like to see in Los Angeles: a bike and walking friendly streets. For too long, I think. LA has basically emphasized bike paths, like, since the 70s, and the idea is, to get the bikes off the street so we can keep driving and to create these kind of recreational paths. I'm not against paths,
but I think we need to see like a wider array of options, just like you're talking about: quiet streets, bike boulevards, sharrows. It's not an all or one thing. It's all of the above.
You know, the interesting thing there is that, and here's where the common ground occurs, the bikeways amenities actually benefit those that don't ride a bike. So on a bike boulevard, for example, when the property values are going up 10%, we're making friends with people that own property and don't ride a bike. when the kids on that particular street can then play in the street without being run over, the kids are benefiting, and they can actually get to school and cross streets without having to get escorted or dropped off by their parents. And so the list of benefits goes on something simple as Bike Boulevard, while at the meantime, the LAPD right now is raising the speed limit throughout the valley in order to catch speeding motorists. It's the voodoo of the 85 percentile rule. So, you see, we're at odds with a couple of significantly powerful departments, the LADOT, which wants to move lots of vehicles as quickly as possible through our traffic sewers, and the LAPD that still subscribes to the idea that if they just raise the speed limit, they can have an easier time catching speeding motorists. Yeah, every time they, to use radar, they have to survey the speed limits, and every time they survey the speed limits, they have to adjust the speed limit and the prevailing speed. They're loath to employ traffic calming techniques to bring the prevailing speed down to the speed limit, so instead it's easier for them to change the sign, raise the speed limit up to the prevailing speed, and there you have the voodoo that we call traffic engineering.
Stephen, I'd like to introduce on an interested caller who just called in with a question. Can you give us your name and let us know what you got to say?
Hey, this is Amanda, and just calling and wondering if you guys could clear this up for me. I'm looking to build a new bike. I'm thinking, like, of doing sort of building up one of those, like, three-speed coaster brake hub things, which I believe exists, right?
Yep, sure.
Okay. And I kind of wanted to, you know, find like a mixty, like an old mixty frame to put those on.
Right.
And, but I've heard that there's like something with old French bikes, because I've been seeing a lot of Peugeot mixties, something about bottom brackets that are weird.
Okay,
I'm
wondering what I should
look out for.
This is a really interesting question here. Yeah, definitely. We're going to hand the phone over here to Jim Bledsoe, or actually, yeah, let's hand the phone over here to him. He has a lot of experience working with older stuff. So, and
that seems like a hard to find bike. That's like the dream bike. You should really settle for something a little less. Three speed hub. If it breaks on you, it's like $150 just to get a brand new hub.
Let's go ahead and hand you over here to Bledsoe.
Okay.
Hello, Amanda.
Hey,
Have you found this bicycle you're looking for?
I have not found it yet. I've been looking on the Craigslist, but
okay.
Nervous to go check them out before I know.
Strummy Archer built a few three-speed hubs with a coaster brake integrated, and I think it was Shimano or Sun Tour. Anyway, they're more common on a Japanese mid-70s hub. To get the coaster brake and the three speed going on, and plus there's a bunch of new Japanese work that's multiple speed hubs with the coaster brake integrated into it. So that's not too hard to find. A mixty frame is a mixty frame. If you want it a Peugeot because it's going to be that color and paint, that's fine. Bottom brackets really aren't that big a deal.
I take issue with that statement, Jim.
The reason I say the bottom bracket's that not that big a deal is that there's a couple things going on. If you use a cottered crank, if you use the crank that comes with the bike originally, you just keep the crank and you've got all the pieces parts that fit. There's some issues of the width of the bottom bracket shell. Sometimes that gets in the way. You can buy modern cassette bottom brackets that fit.
Here's where you get tricky.
Okay, Jim C's got a tricky trick.
If you start working with French bottom brackets, they basically you're going to be looking at the expense of the bottom bracket as in the cassette style, the full cartridge bottom bracket. They stopped doing inexpensive French bottom brackets. Probably 25, 30 years ago. So you would be getting $120 bottom bracket, something like
okay,
that.
Okay. The modern bicycle purveyor has just informed me that it's about $120 to convert a basically a cottered crank French bottom bracket into a modern aluminum crank.
Okay. It's possible.
It's completely possible. Anything's possible. You just throw money at it, and that works. But if you've got a bicycle that has a bottom bracket in it, the bottom bracket that it was manufactured with, it'll work. You can make that work. The Cotard cranks take a little bit of extra expertise. There are people at the Bicycle Kitchen, and we've got a batch of cranks, cotters over there too, that can show you how to install such things.
Cool. I have a question for you. Does she really need the coaster brake? Because you could find
a really decent bike on Craigslist without the coaster brake. That's three speed. You know, that's a mixed. That's there. That's perfect. That's there for you. Like about $200. They have them all the time. But the coaster brake is the hard part.
Our question?
No.
The question was how in love are you with the idea of having a coaster brake on your multiple speed hub?
Well, I kind of want to build that wheel.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, they're not impossible to find. I think that right now at the Bicycle Kitchen there's probably two or three of those laying around. And so, yeah, you can do that. Hang on, someone else wants to speak with you for a second here.
Okay.
Hey there, Amanda.
Hey.
Just wanted to say it's an excellent question. There are some other things about French bikes that are generally a little bit off. The size of their head tube, the size of the steer tube on the fork, they're no longer the standards. Also, they usually have a little bit smaller seat post diameter. So something to keep in mind, if you're looking at an old French bike, some of the older French bikes can be a little bit more of a hassle. But
cool. Yeah, I don't have my heart set on Peugeot. That's just kind of all that's coming up lately. but I wanted to ask before I...
Okay.
Cool.
Well, we're going to get back here to this this interview with Stephen Box, and thank you very much for your call. All right. All right. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
He has a tiny passing mouth.
Those are good. Is this up?
Yeah.
Those are good points about a French bicycle, and they apply more to the older French bicycles because the steer tube, the size of the stem that you put in that is going to be slightly smaller than what you can readily get today. So if you're going to build a French bike, the way to avoid the basic problems is to start with one that's complete and be careful about the pieces, parts that you try to use, the things that are unique to it, seat posts, stems, bottom brackets, these things, the parts that actually address the bicycle frame to the parts that you put on it. If you can get a complete one, then you've got a better chance of maintaining that the rideability of your bicycle and actually achieving what you need to achieve. So that's what you want to do. If you're gonna start with a complete bicycle.
No, she's not.
One is a question from a guy.
Oh, actually, I'm sorry.
Wait, it's gonna take a second. Talk amongst yourselves.
Well, I mean, it was nice to sidetrack on the French, but I really got caught up on the main streets versus side streets. And I think you really still need shows on a lot of the main street. Hollywood is deadly. Hollywood Boulevard, Santa Monica Boulevard's deadly. But you've got to cross those streets to get to the little streets. You've got to cross the street.
There are traffic lights.
But what's awesome is in like the LACBC in San Francisco, what I hear is they've made this map of slurping. I think it's called slurping. And they do this to avoid the hills. So they give you a map so that you could just go along and avoid every hill. And I think we should see it the same way. We should be able to like have a map so that you avoid the big streets and are able to get into the small streets at a good opportune time.
That's a very good idea. And also each individual rider can find those streets for themselves, though. You have to go by the philosophy and the understanding that the streets parallel to the streets you know the names of are going to take you to the same place. and they're going to be empty. And if you, and you know that, like, for instance, if you want to go from Vermont to La Cienega between Melrose and Beverly, there are streets that do that almost entirely. But when you cross, you're going east and west there. But when you cross the major north-south thoroughfares, the roads don't go through. And you make a right and make an immediate left. And that actually helps with it because you're merging like you're driving on the freeway or something. The bicycle, you know, if you know how to navigate the freeway in your car, you treat the roads on your bicycle like it's a freeway. And you don't stop. You just turn, you merge. You flow with you go with the flow of the things. The bicycle is this minuscule, tiny, slow moving thing that fits through holes that are in traffic that you don't even realize that you can fit through half the time. You can get all the way to La Cienega between Melrose and Beverly, with the exception of a brief period of time when you have to slip up to Melrose. There's a golf course that cuts it in half,
yeah.
But there's wood streets,
Oakwood,
Rosewood, yep. Maplewood, the woods. They go in between, and they take you all the way across. Then they're really beautiful streets.
Also, so, you've got 4th Street that runs through there.
4th Street goes down there. 4th Street's a decent street. It's a little bit further south. It's south of Beverly. There's a road called Willoughby. Willoughby's a wonderful street. There are no intersections where there's a the right of way breaks you away and stuff.
Hello,
Kill Radio.
It's Alex Thompson again.
Alex Thompson, once again.
Yeah, I got something to say about what Jim said.
I'm a listener.
I was, you know, verbalizing a map of Hollywood.
Okay.
So, if you're interested in hearing it.
Sure, go on. You're on the air, man. Let us know.
I'm on right now.
Yeah, you're on.
I hear Jim.
You're on the air.
There's a little bit of delay.
Is your livecast lagging?
Their senses lagging, yes.
Okay, all right, now I hear myself. Okay, I just don't agree with what Jim's saying. It's not true that you can expect people to find the right streets to ride for themselves. I still find streets that are better streets to ride than I haven't been riding, and I know the West Side like the back of my hand.
Now, wait a minute. You just contradicted yourself. You said you're finding better streets all the time. Every time you ride your bicycle, you go look for these streets, and you find the streets that get you where you want to go.
No, but I'm finding better ones still.
You're finding better ones still.
Indeed,
you are.
But we cannot expect novice cyclists to go out there and find the streets that are great to ride on their own. We can't. That is an expectation that will lead to people abandoning the bicycles, and then you guys will get more donations to the bike kitchen, and you'll be very happy. But there won't be more cyclists.
I'm not saying that people should not advertise, should not promulgate, should not find some way of making their bicycles drip paint on the road on those streets so other people can find them more easily.
One of the things
I'm not saying any of those things. I'm just simply saying that if you are out there riding your bicycle and you find it arduous to ride on that street you know the name of, there's a road parallel to that one which will inform you better. And the more people riding on those streets, the better off we'll all be.
Okay. It sounded like you were saying maybe we shouldn't be, we don't need to promote them. And I think it's very important to promote them because I don't think that, you know, especially new people don't know where to ride.
Absolutely not. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm promoting you ride on the streets you don't know the names of.
Let's go back to what you said about taking collector streets, and then Veronica was pointing out that you still have to cross the big streets. And I would add to that, sometimes you still have to go on the big streets to go to the big box store that you need to go, you know, buy shoes at. So,
Stephen Box has stores? What?
Yeah, I know. He's a corporate mogul. And I got to disagree there, too, with you. What you're saying, Jim, is that there's traffic lights there. Well, yeah, but you know
what?
It's like stop every quarter mile.
Wilton is a hell street, but you can cross it at Wilton at on Fountain and Lexington, cross Wilton at lights.
Okay, I I have no problem with crossing at lights.
It helps. Find the lights. Map it out.
Let me finish. Yeah,
this is a really interesting.
You hit the lights at the collector streets. The light is much longer for their arterial street, for the big street. So you end up waiting longer. Plus, you're hitting them every quarter mile. It's not convenient. And we, just the way LADOT tries to shove as much traffic down a street as quickly and conveniently as possible for the motorists,
Alex,
we need to have a reasonable standard of convenience for cyclists. And having to stop every quarter mile and wait for 60 seconds of a light is not convenient.
Yeah, Alex, this is Jim C. here. Like I,
yo.
To an extent, I agree with both of you guys here. However, there was a study. There are studies that have been done in other cities. A lot of these have been parts of programs where people getting their doctorates have put together bike planning routes. And they've used systems similar to Google Maps where you can go on, you can plan your route, you can put it out there to the community, and they can vote on which routes they think are better.
Sure.
This is one of the things I would love to put a call out to anybody who knows how to do any mapping setup, any kind of program to let us vote on which routes are the best through the entire city. I think that would be an excellent thing to take to any transportation master plan meeting. And that gets us right back onto what we were talking about before here. I'm going to hand the phone over here to Eric.
Yeah, I agree. This is a great actual grant opportunity. I know Boston is doing exactly what you were just talking about. And it's what you call a GIS application. It would be using global positioning coordinates to basically map out the city. And not just map the routes, but you could also map accidents, too, and see if there are clusters and that kind of thing. Another thing, of course, are to take another slam at the Department of Transportation. Another thing that they don't do is to map out the accidents, so we don't know the data on this. Clearly, we do need a large map that would map out things. And take another slam at the DOT. They do have maps, and they're terrible. Mr. Box wants to say something here.
Very interesting conversation, and the idea of all this high-tech stuff is one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is quite simply if you're riding on a street that's dark with street lights that are out, such as Cahuenga or Sepulveda over the hill, and there are no parallels to those two streets. In other words, the Sepulveda Pass over the hill is just a brutal route for cyclists simply because of the poor maintenance and the lights that are out, which, by the way, was also used in Bikeways funding, was absconded in that particular project. But the Cahuenga Pass, which is in Councilmember Tom Labonge's district, you know, he's a cyclist's best friend. I know that for a fact because he told it to me. But if you ride Cahuenga, you'll doubt that because you'll find 30 streetlights that are completely missing their fixtures in many cases on the Cahuenga Pass coming from Universal over. It's split. So this is on the west side. Cahuenga. And so when you're coming over Cahuenga late at night and there aren't many options, I guess the other one is to go through around Burbank and Griffith Park, but there just aren't many options unless you ride illegally over Griffith Park on the trail.
Lake Hollywood shortcut through there when it's open.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Peaceful.
Yeah, and it's got this water up there too.
Yeah.
So anyway, one of the low-tech opportunity is to rail on our leadership to maintain the streets, fix the lights, and that would make some of the collector streets or the side streets more appropriate. It would also make some of the larger streets more accessible and rideable. So it's kind of a bit of both. But anyway, back to the debate over big streets versus little streets, eh?
Actually, I think, what do you say we move on here?
Open the phone line.
Open the phone line up and get some other folks in.
Yeah. Thanks,
okay, Alex, thank you very much for your call.
Bye, Jim.
Again, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. I have a question that I got last night recorded. I recorded a question from a security
Here comes Nick with a question from a security guy in the entertainment district here, Sergeant John. Well, maybe he's queued up. I don't know what just happened to him. Sergeant John just... Here he goes.
Yeah, my question is, how do I get involved in a bike club?
I've seen these bike clubs run through L.A., big groups of people, and I want to be part of it, too. So how do I find out how to join a bike club? I'm a public safety officer downtown, and we use bikes for that purpose. And, of course, they're very useful. Much better to have a bike than be on foot, of course, or in a car.
Got to grease the right palms,
we love it. It's great. It's good for us. It's good for the district. It's good for the community. And all around, it's a good thing. And I love it so much, I'd like to, you know, after hours, do more biking. And if I could join a bike club, I would love to do that. So I would appreciate you letting us know where we can find out.
Do you know about Midnight Riders?
No, I don't.
Midnight Riders is a big one.
Okay, so could you say your name again, please?
That's it. Okay.
That's the question?
That's the question.
Sounds like it's already been answered. Yeah, the guy next to him said Midnight Riders, RIDAZZ.com. Where anybody can go and find a group of like-minded folks to ride with. And also you can go and post your own rides if you'd like to find some like-minded people who might ride around in circles with you. Last night I posted a ride, for example. It's called the DWP Festival of Rights.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. It's a bike ride on December 8th, which is a Monday night. And that's the night that Griffith Park is opened up to motor vehicles and the ban on cyclists continues. And so we'll be riding our bicycles, bring bail money and a friend, because you'll need it that night, because it's illegal to ride your bike in the Griffith Park Festival of Lights.
Although the whole rest of the year you can ride your bike through Griffith Park.
Yes, you just can't do it during holiday season, because holidays are for motorists, not for cyclists.
And fancy lights are not for cyclists.
Are they not going to do – they're not going to do a bicycle ride through it this year?
Well, they're doing a bike night, because as we all know, the cyclists celebrate the holidays on November 25th.
Only.
Right. And then motorists celebrate from November 26th through the new year. So I hope you've got all your holiday shopping done, cyclists. Orange 20, perfect place to buy a bike.
That's my commute. That's part of my commute, by the way. It's right through there. And I like to head back around 7 p.m. going south through Griffith Park on Riverside. And, yeah, they cut me off. And I can hop down in the river, but it's, you know.
We got a.
That's dark, too.
We got.
Bikeboom.com,
once again, bikeboom.com, midnightriders.com, RIDAZZ.com.
Plus just being out on the streets at night, weekend nights, you just...
Yeah, anytime you see a guy on a bike, just follow him around and like...
I do see groups. I'm surprised. Thursday night, I was out in Santa Monica minding my own business, and I fell in with a pack of... wandering, roaming cyclists. And
on Tuesday I saw the taco ride too. So they're out there. Just go ahead and join on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, so we've got a phone call here from NC, and she wants to talk about the what do you want to talk about, NC?
Oh, I just wanted to make a comment about the big streets or versus little streets or side streets. I as a woman actually rather ride on the big streets than on the side streets, especially at night, because it's much safer. If anything happens to me, there are witnesses, people can see me. Small streets, the side streets are usually really dark and they're not maintained. There is potholes, people are, you know, lurking at weird corners that are dark or very poorly lit. So I know that so many people like to push cyclists or there is this idea or, as Jimmy C. said, that there are these studies that might encourage people to ride on smaller streets because it's safer. But I personally, as a woman, I think it's much safer to ride on the big street because cars don't want to hit us. They don't go out of their way to hit us. Of course, there is a few crazy people, but those crazy people, you know, are... Even if you're in a car, it's dangerous. So, that's just my opinion, that I think larger streets with more traffic are actually safer. If it's completely congested, I love riding it because the cars are not moving anyways. So I can
yeah, I know.
Ride
that's great, huh?
Past everybody. And I'd rather ride on the big streets than trying to cross them because crossing them, yes, is completely dangerous. Uh-huh. But we do have
to employ strategies for crossing them because we do need to cross them from time to time.
Absolutely, of course, yes. I mean, even if I ride on Santa Monica,
and I hear you're reticent to be out there in the dark and that stuff. I also I don't use lights on my bicycle for two reasons. One is that I think it's a false sense of security because I might get hit anyway, and so I just ride like I'm invisible. And the other thing is that I am, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't have the female thing to worry about in those in that thing. But I do. But no, no. Let me finish my thought here.
What does that have to do with life?
But I do have. I do think that if you're riding your bicycle along at 10 or 15 miles an hour, 20 miles an hour, whatever you're doing, and you don't have any lights on a dark street, the thugs and the people, they don't even know you're there until you're gone, and so it's a help. But I do like the idea that, you know, the least likely accident is to be rear-ended. So ride your bike out in the middle of the street and ride.
Riding without lights is not something that the station
supports or endorses. I'm under the idea of people, so I am riding in the center of the street. I have lights, but I do understand what you were saying. Everybody has different philosophies, just like we drive different cars for different reasons, and we believe in it. So are cyclists. We're such different people. We're not one huge, big people.
And
there is different ideas, and
and
whatever makes us feel safer, I think we should decide for ourselves, as opposed to the city leadership telling us or the streets.
I think
that
we are the city leadership, in fact.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Those guys are just put there to figure out what it is that we're talking about, and the more visible we become in all aspects of using our bicycles on all the streets that there are, and all the opportunities that we have, then the more cyclists are likely to start to be, you know, the more of us there'll be, and that's happening on a daily basis. There's more of us.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Any other thing you want to add in here?
No, that was it.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to me.
Oh, thank you for calling.
Great show. It's really great.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
Mr. Bledsoe will be hosting this year's Festival of No Lights on a dark street in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
And just so you know, that admonition to travel with lights was brought to you by a gentleman who sells lights. So I guess we all have different perspectives here.
Well, that's right. This is the, you know, the Festival of No Lights. Oh, we got another phone call. This is wonderful.
Just listen for that freewheel.
Russell from San Pedro. I was just wondering if I could talk for a minute about the meeting yesterday.
Sure. Talk about the meeting yesterday. Here, I'll give you to Mr. Box, who was at the meeting.
All right.
Yo.
Mr. Box?
Yeah.
Is that you?
This is, yep.
Hey, it's Mr. Russell from San Pedro.
What's happening, PC, my
man?
Hey,
what's up, man? Yeah, I was just wondering, I don't know if you guys addressed this yet, because I kind of tuned in late, but the whole licensing issue that we discussed over there.
Well, we touched on it. On the phone right now is one of the cyclists who picked up a ticket, a souvenir ticket from LAPD on a bike ride, I think, a month and a half, 2 months ago. And the interesting thing was there was a reporter from the Los Angeles Magazine riding along on that ride. And so he was able to witness, and he got involved with the police department. But we briefly touched on it. What's your take on it? Because you gave some eloquent testimony yesterday.
Well, I kind of noticed that it seems like some of the council members got it more than others. I got the feeling that Bill Rosendahl really understood what we were complaining about, but Tom Labonge didn't seem to really understand what our basic objection was. He, like, one of the other guys was testifying, and Labonge kept asking him, well, what do you think would be a reasonable amount to pay for a license? As though that were our problem with it. It's not, you know, we're not complaining about the $3. We're complaining about the fact that this is a law that is archaic and is not enforced, and it's almost impossible to comply with, and now they're bringing these violations on people who are not complying with a law that, like, 99% of the public doesn't comply with and can't comply with.
Russell, this is Eric Kay. I was wondering if you could briefly explain what happened when you got your ticket and what the aftermath was for our many listeners out there in listener land.
Well, sure, yeah. My case has not gone to trial yet, so I'm not going to get into too much detail. But I will say that I and some friends came upon a scene where some LAPD officers had a cyclist in handcuffs, and the guy they had in handcuffs had allegedly jumped a red light, and it seemed to us like that was maybe a little bit excessive to put a guy in cuffs for running a red light. So we wanted to observe and make sure that there was no abuse, and I think a couple of us had video cameras, and surprisingly, the police objected to this. They didn't want to be observed while they were working, while they had a suspect in custody. So they tried to order us to go across the street, and when we peacefully asserted our right to observe them and watch what was going on, they immediately started looking for things to give people tickets for. They were, as I said in the testimony at the meeting yesterday, not testimony, but during my comment at the meeting yesterday, they were about to give me a ticket for having no headlight until I showed them that I had a headlight and that it was on and it was blinking at the guys we were seeking. So eventually they started asking, well, who here has a bike license? And that's what happened. They started ticketing people for bike licenses because they didn't want us to observe them with their treatment of a suspect. And I've seen that in other places, too. I've seen LAPD officers pull that same thing when we were either questioning them or arguing with them. And, in fact, I actually saw it in Long Beach as well during a Simpsons Rockets ride when the Long Beach PD freaked out at seeing a bunch of cyclists on a public street, started pulling people over, and they were actually almost broke one of our guys' arms. And we were trying to videotape it, and of course the first thing out of the officer's mouth was, well, who here has a bike license? So it looks like the only real useful thing about this law is as a tool of harassment for cops who don't want to be observed on the job.
Oh, the penalty's significant. How much was your ticket?
Well, like I say, it hasn't gone to court yet, but the bail amount was about $150. Everybody said it was going to be a $10 ticket, so imagine my surprise when I got the thing in the mail. It's $150.
The bicycle I built at the bicycle kitchen ended up costing me $106. I got some custom grips and I bumped the price up a tad. But
you got some grips, did you?
Yeah, and it was a pretty bike. Did me well.
I take it they matched your hubs, right?
Yeah. we did the color correction and. And I had a stylist work with me on it, too. But $106 out the door for a wonderful bike, my favorite bike of all time. And the ticket for not having a license on that bike then would be $160, which seems a tad excessive. The other thing that's interesting is when you register a car, you don't have to actually physically carry the car to Sacramento on Tuesday or Thursday from 5 to 7 and wait for Officer Bob of the DMV to come out of a back office with a little box and then issue you a little license for your little registered car. In other words, it's so sophisticated when it comes to registering, I don't know, cars. You can even check out library books online. But when it comes to getting a license for your bicycle, all of a sudden we go Neanderthal and it requires actually carrying something physically to a station that's not equipped to handle the simple requirement to get a license. In other words, it's this voodoo circle of there's no choice but non-compliance, literally. If you consider 4 million people, are they all expected to go to Skid Row, to go to the Central Station on Tuesday from 5 to 7 and look for a guy who's not equipped to handle the request? Anyway, so your point was well made yesterday, and it was good to have you and Roadblock there.
Well, I like to see some. But I just wanted to see what you and Eric and Veronica and anybody else who was there might have thought about the response that we got from it, because Rosendahl seemed really, really enthusiastic about, at least, if nothing else, at least trying to get a moratorium on enforcement of this thing.
Well, there were a couple of responses. The first one is specific to the issue of bike licensing and the fact that it's an inappropriate law, inappropriately enforced, and that the police department is ill-equipped to handle enforcement of this particular law. But the second issue is the fact that when Bill Rosendahl can raise his voice, when Bernard Parks, the former police chief of the city of Los Angeles, can chime in, that it's perfectly within the police department's authority to make a decision not to enforce a bad law until it's clarified, or the enforcement is clarified, and the city attorney is consulted, and the city council has had an opportunity to weigh in. When the significant heat of the transportation committee for the city council gives a directive to the, I think it was Assistant Chief Pacinger of the LAPD, and he blows them off. It speaks volumes to the environment we live in, where the LAPD feels completely comfortable blowing off not just the, as Mr. Bledsoe points out, the leadership of Los Angeles, which consists of us, but also those that we've put in office to represent us. When the police department completely blows them off the same week that they paid $13 million to settle out of MacArthur Park's melee. I don't know what a melee is, but I had to look it up. But apparently they cost $13
million.
Freak out that this tug of war of authority, the bike license is an indicative element, and it's obviously, as has been demonstrated, a tool for harassment more than a tool for reaching some sort of goal, whether it's loss prevention. We got 20. Oh, we got 20 listeners online. All right, I'm gonna turn you back over to Jim C.
Hey, Russ, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing good.
That was an incredible call. Thank you very much. We're going to go back and talk a little bit more with Eric here and see if we can figure out what else is going on.
I suck at you all.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call, Russ. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, that you get back to the bike license issue. And there's actually multiple Erics in the room, so we could talk to either Eric. But
Eric P. here also.
Exactly. But the scary thing, am I on here? The scary thing is, you know, just as Stephen was saying, is who does the police department answer to? Rosendahl was basically yelling at this assistant police chief yesterday to at least do a moratorium on the bike license thing. And the police chief, assistant police chief, basically completely avoided the question and went out of the room. You know, there's many absurdities to this bike license thing. Every bike shop in the city is supposed to issue a bike license when you buy a bike. That's clearly never done. I mean, it's ridiculous. So obviously, this law needs to be repealed. That's the position of the LA County Bicycle Coalition, that we need to get rid of it because it's antiquated, and clearly it's just being used as a fishing expedition by police officers in the field trying to find a way to harass cyclists.
What do you think at the moment? Is it a good idea to now to actually get this little bicycle license for your bike? Or does it make life easier for you in terms of police involvement, or is it going to become more complicated and put you on some kind of record? Or,
well, that's a very interesting question, isn't it? Because we don't know after yesterday if the police department is going to do the 60-day moratorium. So if you're going to follow the letter of the law, I suppose you have to get the license. Unfortunately, to get that license, you only have two police stations, correct me here if I'm wrong, that you can go to, one of which is in the middle of Skid Row, and it's only available at certain hours, and they often run out of those licenses. And the other is, I don't even know where that the other police station is.
Well, maybe we should.
I think we've got a roadblock joining us on
a cadre of folk, and we go down
doing,
there at
Jim?
The point of time and inundate them with people wanting
Bledsoe.
To comply with this law.
Bledsoe,
Eric,
we're all. We got a
online?
Phone caller here. You're on. You have been instrumental in several of the things in this city, including setting up websites that we've mentioned online, in doing and organizing and doing a lot of the Wolfpack hustle stuff, and also in obviously helping out with the transportation decisions, and now you're even affecting what's going on downtown and making statements that are having a big impact in this city. I know that you wanted to talk a little bit about the Department of Transportation. Let's hear what you have to say.
First of all, I was totally stoked to go down there with under Stephen Box's direction with the Cyclist Bill of Rights to support that. But sitting there in the meeting and hearing the LADOT, which I wasn't expecting to actually hear on the agenda, I was actually shocked. I was actually, first of all, the fact that the public comment period came before the LADOT presented their research and their plan, if you want to call it a plan, was totally backwards, as you would say. I don't want to get censored off the internet here, but man, when those guys were talking, I was going bananas. It was just like they were talking as though they weren't even. I mean, it was so obvious that they don't care about bicycling. Period. I think they, you know, just from the comment that I forget her name. I think it was like Michelle Mallory or something was saying about how painting sheros with a certain type of slick paint is dangerous for cyclists. I was just like, who are these people? They obviously don't care about cyclists. Are these elected people? I mean, that's a good question to start off with, maybe for Steven. Are these people elected to their position?
Let's see if we can get them on here.
Actually, they're not elected, but they're covered by, they're hired by the city of Los Angeles, which pays its municipal employees more than any other city in the United States of America, and they're covered by a fairly strong union, which means that they're here for the duration while our council members and mayors come and go.
So, can you put me up to the speaker, because I can't hear Steven.
Okay. All right. Hold on. Just
sorry, Arby's. The answer was they're not elected. They're hired, and they're paid more than any other city employee in any other city. And they're here for the duration because they're covered by a fairly strong union. So while our city council members come and go, we're going to have an uphill battle to get our mayor and our city councilman to join us in directing these departments.
Yeah, because, I mean, the next issue, the next thing that they brought up, I mean, I'm just going point by point what I remember these guys were talking about yesterday. And the other guy, Michael, whatever, Michael Ueno?
Bueno?
Michael Bueno. He sounded very lost when he started describing the situation in San Francisco and the situation in Los Angeles, started comparing the two, and one of the things that I heard him talk about was he was talking about a street in San Francisco that was comparable in size, I think, to Fountain. But he was talking about the amount of traffic that flows through it. One of the points that he brought up was, well, this street only has 2,000 cars per day, or 2,000 vehicles per day traveling along this street, and by contrast, Fountain has 10,000 vehicles, and he was using that as an excuse not to put sheros because cyclists are slower than your car traffic, and that would slow down traffic in general. My question was, and this is a point that I heard Joseph from the bike oven bring up before, was it shouldn't be about number of vehicles passing through, it should be about number of people passing through this corridor. And then the next question is, are they counting a bus as a vehicle, or are they counting a train as a vehicle? Because if there's only 2,000 vehicles traveling on the street, then that's a good thing, and maybe we can do the same thing with Fountain and other streets where it's, you're counting the number of people getting through. So if a bus is carrying 100 people through there, that's more productive than one vehicle carrying one person that's taking.
Those are excellent points, Roadblock. Those are really good, and that's something like basically that's something that needs to be taken up not only with DOT, MTA. It's something that we need to stay on the city about, because this is something that until I think the city fixes the transportation problem, and as we've already said, a lot of our DOT guys are hired until the city gets on top of them and gives the money, routes the money necessarily to the MTA, the metro systems, instead of spending, you know, $1.2 million on the freeway overpass, you know, on the freeway entrance. Then we're gonna keep seeing more and more people, single car drivers, flooding these small streets.
Yeah, and I can also hear what Bledsoe's saying about taking the side streets and things like that. And as far as Los Angeles is concerned, we're so in the infancy as far as being a commuter-friendly city that if we just get sheros up, bike paths, bike lanes, all that stuff, and I know everyone's arguing about whether bike lanes are good or not, or whether sheros are good or not. It, in my mind, it doesn't matter. It should be a full assault of all kinds of bike signage at first. And then, you know, just to get people out there on their bikes and not afraid to get out there on their bikes, as long as they're seeing these signs for bikes and there's some kind of
you bring up a really good point here, right? The people feel good about riding if they feel like they're allowed to do it. If they feel like it's something that they can do. And right now there's nothing welcoming at all about riding a bike in Los Angeles. It's probably one of the things that I see the most. People come in, they're excited, they want to get a bike, they want to go out, and they want to get around. They want to enjoy the weather, they want to enjoy the city that they live in. But they're afraid to. And we do need that, the assault of all senses. It doesn't matter. Anything to kind of make you feel, even if it is a placebo, you know? So
yeah. I mean, when we recently did our trip of Midnight Riders to New York, there was about 26 of us that went out there to go check out Bike Kill, which was totally fucking awesome. But I was kind of like, I mean, for me, I was intimidated. I was like, you know, I've never ridden a bike in New York before. It sounds pretty hardcore, you know? But when I got out there, there's bike lanes, there's sharrows, there's, you know, people recognize bikes as a legitimate vehicle. I was actually very comfortable in New York. I was actually more comfortable mashing up and down Manhattan than I was riding up and down Sunset Boulevard or Vermont Boulevard in Los Angeles. I mean, by far.
This is Eric Kay here. I mean, it gets down to a very fundamental problem in this city. And Jane Jacobs, the great urban historian, and Joseph Braille also talk about this. And the question is, do we want streets for people, or do we want a sewer for automobiles? And the entire, I mean, Jane Jacobs says that the entire profession of traffic engineering is a bogus profession because its criteria is how many cars can we move and how fast can we move them. And if you look at the city of L.A., that's clearly been the design of our streets. It hasn't been about, can we make a nice street here? And this is an issue much bigger than just whether we can ride our bike safely. This is, can our children walk to school? Can our elderly parents walk to the supermarket if they can't drive?
Exactly.
Can businesses thrive? And the answer is no. I mean, if you look at most L.A. streets, the big streets, what you'll see is a bunch of boarded up stores. You'll see, actually, in my neighborhood, we have a lot of sweatshops that operate behind what used to be storefronts. And that's because we have these basically, again, these sewers for automobiles.
Oh,
and that's the design criteria that the LADOT follows. And we have to remember that we have a mayor who ran on a platform of let's get traffic moving. And the difference between our mayor and, say, the mayor of Chicago and Mayor Bloomberg of New York is both Daley of Chicago and Bloomberg of New York have called for better streets and more bike infrastructure. And we have a mayor who, as Stephen likes to say, can't even say the word bicycle. I think Stephen, he confuses it with the word bisexual and you know, doesn't want to say it, right? So
he might make a Freudian slip or something accidentally, because he's very scared of that word.
Yeah, he can't say it. You know, there's a lot of politicians here who have to say bicyclist. They just can't get the word out, right?
They
haven't used it in the vocabulary.
I mean, kind of back to the design of our you know, transportation in our society. If you go to the outer, you know, the outer reaches of the valley out here, where they're still kind of building these communities onto the edge of the city of Los Angeles, like out at Rinaldi in Tampa. You go out there, and I'm sure it's the same for Orange County and some of these other places that are way out in the suburban areas. You see these huge, huge parking lots, and these you know, for the big box stores like Walmart and you know, all the Walmart and whoever the hell else these other big stores are. What is it, like Best Buy and everything? Those parking lots, those could be parks. Those could be smaller design communities with small businesses that are serving the same purpose as Walmart is, or the same purpose as all these mall, giant parking lot, mall, multi-story, I don't even know what you call them. You got to call it the LADOT. They probably have a technical term for it. But it's wasting our land with huge parking lots, and it just feels so impersonal. It doesn't feel like a community. It feels like you're kind of this, you know, human that's being shoved through a pig pen. I don't know, you know, like you're on a farm or something. You're being farmed for your money. You're being milked for your money as you're going through these troughs.
You talked about
consumerism,
about the idea of community here, and we're getting back onto that. Basically, I know you've been responsible for helping to organize a tremendous amount of rides and a tremendous amount of rider influence events here in Los Angeles. Is there anything that you want to talk about coming up that people can get into?
One thing I'd like to talk about is next month's Midnight Riders ride. It's the third annual All City Toy Ride, and we're working on the spot where it's going to be held at. We basically have rides that start from all corners of the city. There's going to be rides from the West Side, Long Beach, the Valley, Hollywood,
wherever you're at.
And it's all going to converge into one big giant party where we're going to all bring toys. And you know what? Not only toys, but blankets and anything that you can donate for the cause, which is for... I actually got to look up what the... I don't think we have a charity just yet, but it's a charity for basically donating food and goods and toys and things to homeless and to children. And it's a good cause, and I think everybody should, you know, check it out and come on down and
there are a lot of people that lost their houses this year. There are a lot of people that lost their houses this year in the fire. This is a great time for you to come out, ride your bike.
Especially the mobile home parks.
Especially the mobile home parks. Everybody, you know, everyone, really.
Yeah, everybody, for sure.
But, come on down, donate some toys and take a ride with them, right?
Yeah, and party, too.
And party.
Why not party while you're doing your good deed?
I don't like anything else that we want to talk about here, Low Block. Anything else that you want to get off your chest?
I mean, I do shave my chest sometimes, but I feel a little stubble coming back.
What's going on with Wolfpack? What is Wolfpack, and what's going on with it right now?
Wolfpack Hustle is a Monday night ride, a weekly Monday night ride that's been going on for a couple years now. Basically, that ride turned into, it started as a group of friends kind of doing a fast-paced ride on Mondays, and it's now become sort of a revolution of my body and spirit, to be honest. I mean, I've lost weight, I've gained muscle, I'm in a lot better shape than I was 2 years ago before I started. And it's basically, we ride 40-mile loops, different routes around L.A. Start at 10 o'clock at Sunset and Fountain.
Is this an intermediate ride, you'd say, a beginner ride, an advanced ride?
It's all of the above. If you're a beginner, come on out. Because the thing is, people hear about Wolfpack and they get kind of intimidated about the speed and everything, but it's really, it depends on who shows up. If 40 people show up that are beginners, then that's the speed of the ride. If it's a mix, we break into basically groups along the way. So there's the guys in the front are fast, obviously. The guys in the middle a little slower, and then there's people that bring up the rear. We do stop after about 10 miles, in 10-mile increments, usually, and we stop for a smoke break, and it's, you know, between 10 and 15 minutes, so everybody can catch up. So it's really about endurance, and what I always tell people is if you come out four times in a row, you'll be able to do the whole ride, no problem. And people get addicted to it. People have been on this ride for 2 years straight, aside from myself and Wolf Rider 1. And the thing is I've grown up in this city, but I didn't know this city until I did Wolfpack. If you mention any part of the city, I can visualize it in my head because I've ridden there. And that's what I love about that ride. It actually made Los Angeles smaller, something that seemed so impossible to get, you know, from the Valley to L.A., now seems like nothing. I can ride anywhere in the city and not be afraid of the distance, and I'm not afraid of cars, and I know the roads, so that's what Wolfpack has done for me.
I was told that one night when I rode up there to Tang's that they'd give me a money-back guarantee that I would get dropped. Is that true?
A money-back, yeah, well, the ride's free, so definitely.
So, as we're on the subject of
or a track bike.
Yeah. While we're on the subject of Wolfpack and also community events, I did want to mention one other thing. We do have Cranksgiving coming up this Wednesday. Cranksgiving is another charity fund, charity race. We'll call it a charity fun ride. Yeah, I'm going to have to actually look it up to give you a little more information on it. But thank Roblox, do you have anything else that you'd like to mention here?
All you people on the internet, go outside. It's a beautiful day after this show's over, and ride your bicycle.
Thank you very much, Roblox. I'll talk to you soon.
Get off your computers, you
All right, we're censoring you. We're censoring you. Okay, you're censored.
All right.
That's the kind of
I'm back
we
on here,
want.
I think. We are looking up, if you actually go to orange20bikes.com, we do have a flyer up there for Cranksgiving. It's got...
That's a benefit also, Cranksgiving.
Right? Yeah, Cranksgiving usually does food for Para Los Niños. Basically, you start out and you go visit at 5 to 10, sometimes a little bit more.
Different markets.
Different supermarkets. Get food as fast as you can.
You got to get the right food item from the right market and have it on your receipt.
Yep.
And it's really fun. It's a challenge. You're just shredding all over downtown, Echo Park, East End places, hitting up markets and gathering up food. And it's a race. You get back. Try to get back as fast as you can. You can win that thing. You could win some prizes. I think you can win some money. And all that food that you gather up, everyone involved, all that food goes to feed people.
This year it is a $10 entry fee. They're meeting at 7 o'clock p.m. at Echo Park Lake, right by the lighthouse. Everyone who enters gets a T-shirt and a spoke card. So add one of those spoke cards to your wheel collection there, buddies.
That's right, and you should bring yourself a trailer because that turkey's going to be heavy.
I don't even remember who won last year. I think the biggest thing, Ron Milam won.
Won
yes,
the
yeah,
race
yeah.
last night.
And then the big one for me was Ozzy. Ozzy came in second. And I think this year if he doesn't take it, he's gunning for it. Or actually maybe he's not. Maybe he's going to ride slow and promote Echo Park Cycles. So I'm going to hand the phone over here to Eric Potter.
Hello.
How are you doing, Eric?
So Cranksgiving is a good opportunity to set up some teamwork too there. So make your teams
figure out how to
work that out because you know it's Wednesday before Thanksgiving. You're going into those supermarkets and I hear that teams are illegal, so you can't tag team. You got to be. This is an individual DIY thing, but DIT.
Oh, is that
the,
for reals, Jim? It's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be an individual alley cat. This isn't one of the team alley cats where you group up. But you know, it's a messenger race, and anything goes pretty much in those guys. So I'd like to while we still have. Stephen Box, Eric K., Eric Potter here. I'd like to hand the microphone over to them and let them get a little bit of a rap session in here.
Just one last bit on Cranksgiving. It's really all about the fun. And the first time I went, I was kind of intimidated to like get in this messenger-sponsored alley cat race thing. I'm like, oh, man. And I just went for it anyway. And it was so much fun. And you forget that you're competing or you're just enjoying yourselves and just scrambling around. It's just nuts. It's absurd. And people are laughing, riding around.
And
it's in streets of like downtown, east side, Echo Park, etc.
It starts at Echo Park Lake, and I just wandered into it back in 2005. I just had the best time. I ended up winning foot down. I'd never done any of the contests before, and I just stumbled into it and ended up winning some stuff, and it was a blast. So don't be intimidated if it's not like super competition thing. It's just totally nuts.
Yeah, that's a good point about not being intimidated. NC and I joined the Thus Spoke Zarathustra race 2 years ago, and I'm proud to say that we came in tied for last place. Well, actually, NC did beat me. But the thing is, it was fun, and everybody was still there waiting for us when we got there, and we finished the course, and we ended up running every staircase in Echo Park Silver Lake with our bikes and then racing to the next one. Progressively slower and slower, but we had a great time. And so never, ever be intimidated by these hooligans and scalawags that ride so fast. Jump in and give it your best.
It's actually something of an honor to be dead fucking last.
As I recall, Stephen, you and NC did some garage sale shopping in the midst of that race, which might account for your last place position, but you did actually score a bag, if I'm not mistaken. So it was not all for
nice
for naught. So I can say, as the last place 40-year-old fencer in America as of 2 years ago, proudly in the last place position. So I know about being in last place, and it's great to just show up and do it. So you should all go to Cranksgiving, and as Roadblock said, just get out and ride your bike today. So. You know,
Eric is modest, though, with regards to his athletic prowess. He's also, was it second place in your age category in the Stairway to Heaven race?
That's true. I am the second place 40-year-old stair climber in Los Angeles, so I can probably take that title.
That's the race, the U.S. Bank Building, the tallest building in
exactly.
L.A.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Uh-huh. There were Eric was in second place. There were two contestants in his category, and he was no. I'm kidding.
And I killed them on the way up. Actually, the 40 to 50 year olds, I believe it was. Okay. Yes, exactly. Beat those older guys. So
right.
It was like a day over 40 or something at that point too. So
they're so easy to trip.
Too. Exactly, they're really easy to trip. That's right. All right, I think we have some dead air. Anyone else?
Can you actually ride your bicycle up those stairs? Is that what you're talking about?
No, there is a challenge.
If anyone else wants to call in, ask a question, or say something, 213.
Yeah, what is that phone number?
213-252-0998. Although we're getting on the phone right now, so hang out for a minute. But get your little phones ready.
Hey, what?
The number's 213-252-0998.
Right now we're
hanging out.
I don't know. I don't know why it should be. I mean, it is an environmental impact just to ride a bike on the road instead of taking.
Yeah, I liked your point about that. Where it is, you are impacting
the obvious. Yeah, it is the obvious, and that's why I think it needed to be said over.
Yeah.
Just so that you know, you remember why this is happening.
Yeah.
Not that it's happening because you know there's a special interest group going on, but because this group of people found more people on their bikes. And this is the problems that are faced by people that cycle, that they need this Bill of Rights to be implemented so that it's known, so that these rights can be respected and they can eliminate the problems that happen.
That's David.
Absolutely.
Sexy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, hey. You know what? Hey, when I'm not in room 1010 of the Transportation Committee at City Hall in Los Angeles, I'm listening to the DJ Chicken Leather's Talk Is Still Cheap on KiltRadio.org, 6 to 8 on Saturdays.
And Lara Bike Stuff, listen on 68, Talk Is Cheap.
It's part of the video. I saw these pants being modeled by him the other day.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I need to get a video camera.
Once again, there's a chicken leather lookalike contest. Next Halloween, orange 20 bikes. Next Halloween, chicken leather lookalike contest.
We sat in line for 5 hours the day after Thanksgiving to get this thing.
Yeah.
There is something that I did want to mention that I did want to bring up here. I do work at Orange 20 Bikes. This week specifically, we've seen a couple of things come in. Here, I want to keep everybody on the lookout. Be careful for Craigslist ads and inexpensive track wheel sets. So far I've had a couple people come into the shop that have bought some BMX wheels and just been completely duped. Now, the spacing on a rear wheel of a BMX wheel is 110, and usually they have 20-inch rims on them, but these hubs have been relaced to 700C rims, and they're being sold at $200 or so a pop. And so watch yourself, guys. Be careful what you buy, especially if you're looking at the letters GT in a silver hub. Don't spend the extra
total
money
BMX,
to get... Yeah.
What's the issue with
okay,
that?
It looks like right now we've got a trivia question that's going to be going on here probably. Is that right? Yeah, sure. Let's ask him a trivia question. Let's see what we have here.
Let's
we've
put
got
it to the test.
This is Carlos from Universal Cycles.
Carlos from Universal Cycles in Universal City. How are you doing?
Good.
Okay, Carlos. We got a quick trivia question here for you. If you win, we're going to throw you a free pair of tires. How's that sound?
Okay.
I know you work at a bike shop. That's probably not what you need the most, but hey, it'll be great.
Okay.
Let's see. With a 1-inch headset, there are two sizes of fork crown races. Can you give me one of those two sizes?
Of a fork crown race?
Yep, for a 1-inch headset.
Big and small?
22.4 millimeters.
What was it?
22.4 millimeters.
Nope, sorry. 26.4. You're close. But okay, all right, Carlos. Let's
yeah.
We'll give you a shot next week at those tires here. Do you want to tell us?
Know.
I think we have a question for you about a good ride that's out there in Universal City that you like to do.
What, Studio City road rides?
Either a Studio City road ride, a group ride, anything that you like to do out there. What's your favorite ride?
Probably in this area, riding Mulholland.
Oh, yeah, that is a good ride.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous up there. Do you have any tips or tricks for anybody doing any work to their own bikes or anybody who's looking for anything with a bike?
No.
Okay. Nothing on, like, cleaning the chains or keeping the air pumped?
Well, definitely you got to keep the tires pumped up.
Okay.
That's probably the one most common thing that people don't do.
That's an excellent
Whether it's
one.
On a mountain bike and especially on road bikes where... The pressure, you know, needs to be at least 100 PSI on most road tires.
Okay.
That's the one biggest thing that people don't do is they don't pump up their tires.
Thank you.
Forget.
That's awesome. Thank you very much, Carlos.
Okay.
All right. Let me hand you back over here to Nick. I think we're going to... And
we're almost done here, guys. You want to play the bicycle theme song? Or?
Well, I wanted to play it like...
Going back to Alex Thompson.
I thought I said something good. I was like, that's good.
Well, I think we're probably recapping some of the last meeting you were at. Everybody commented.
See what you got here.
You were there. So, check it probably for this.
Oh, this book?
I see him reading.
This is a book called Pedal Power.
All the lobbyists.
By a Chicago professor, and I don't recommend it. No?
Well,
no.
It says it's about the quiet rise of what?
Quiet rise of the bicycle. See, I don't like anything quiet.
Well,
do you like anything quiet?
Do you know that in Los Angeles there were bicycles here before there were cars?
Yeah.
There was a bikeway that they turned into a freeway?
Yeah, from people participating too.
So when they say, oh, we were here first, it's like, no, the bike was here first.
I don't know, man. You know, LA is just super backwards. Somebody called it ahistorical on Riders recently, and I thought that was a great term because... The place is so spread out. It's like this amoeba. It doesn't really know where its center is. And, like, you know, our brain, the thing that remembers stuff and remembers our identity, that's
right.
The central nervous system, right? We don't have a center in LA. So, like, where's our history? I don't know.
You bring up an interesting point. They always are trying to find a place to turn into like the Times Square of the city to celebrate things. They tried to do that down off 6th Street, and they blocked up the street, bought all this land, and nothing ever got developed there except the theater across the street. They tried to do it again over at the historic park over here to make that a real park, but all the plans want them to be like in the millions of dollars to develop it. So perhaps instead of finding one central place, we just let the people find it themselves.
Gosh, I think what we saw in the meeting today is that LADOT does not want the people to do anything for themselves. But that's a really good observation. It's sort of like people do this. People talk about this in politics, how conservatives and liberals tend, like there was this theory that whether you're a conservative or a liberal, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, has a lot to do with the way you were raised and what your parental figures are like, what your notion of a father or mother is like. So we tend to like take politicians or political parties and think of them as parents, think of them as these individuals, but they're not. They're these huge organizations with all these different things. And LA is the same way. You can't think of LA like a town. It's not a town. It's all these crazy towns. It's like a big, it's not a star, it's a nebula of mini stars, you know? We've got to stop trying to like take the mental models we have from kindergarten, you know, for who's the teacher, who's in charge, and we can't scale those up. They don't make any sense.
Right.
Joseph Ray at least says something a lot like this, and that he says that there's this analogy that people perpetuate that he thinks is a very bad analogy, and I tend to agree, that traffic is like water. Urban designers try to say, okay, traffic's like water. If you divert water, right, if you stop a pipe, then the water has to go someplace else, right? If you divert a river, the water doesn't just cease to exist. It goes someplace else. And people say that with traffic. They're like, well, if you narrow this street, where's the traffic going to go? And what Joseph's always pointing out, which I think is really good, is that by shutting down the street, you're doing less to enable traffic, so you'll reduce traffic. You know, traffic, unlike water, can vanish into thin air.
Well, I think
that was a long, crazy
big deal.
Rant.
No. The big deal is also people don't realize that it's only like 1 or 2%. If you present that relief of 1 or 2%, which the bicycle can do, which public transportation can do.
Okay, you want to explain who that was?
That was the fellow we talked to. That was Alex Thompson from the Biker Wave out in West Side. And what was his blog?
Bike Side West Side
blog is the blog that Alex contributes to. We've got a couple of guests, and we're getting ready to, I think, kind of wrap things up here with bike talk for the day.
Relevant to roadblock, talking about traffic. I thought that was, so I wanted to bring that up, that what he mentioned yesterday, what Alex mentioned about traffic, I thought it was relevant to like seeing the town, to seeing everything in the town with Wolfpack, and seeing the city in a different way. We try to compare it to other cities, we try to make it like another city, but you could only deal with what we have.
Exactly. Good point.
I'd like to make an announcement that we've just got off the Reuters wire that there's a new vehicle out there that gets around 1,000 miles a gallon and it runs on Cheerios. Oh, wait, I'm reading down here. That is the bicycle. 1,000 miles a gallon caloric equivalent and it runs on Cheerios.
And if you don't like Cheerios, it runs on Frosted Flakes.
I have one of those. Mine runs on beans and rice. And I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
Our guests today have been Stephen Box, Eric Kay. We've had Eric Potter and Jim Bledsoe in here. I really want to thank Stephen Box and Eric Kay for all of the hard work that they've done to promote and proliferate bicycles in Los Angeles.
You're here.
And this isn't...
Bravo.
They haven't just been doing... This isn't brand new for these guys. These guys have been at this for a while, so if anybody deserves a lot of respect... And a lot of cheers, a lot of backslapping in this community. These two guys are definitely at the top of the list here.
Yeah, I just wanted to correct one of my mistakes. I'm dyslexic, apparently. It's Westside Bike Side, Alex.
Westside Bike Side, Alex Thompson. Yeah,
I always do that. Sorry.
I don't. I guess any other new news that we need to bring up here. Nothing else. We do know that last week we reported on the midnight express ride going out of Union Station, which got postponed, and I was going to try and talk to the ride promoter for that, Alex Amari, with LACBC today, but we ran out of time. So we will have more on that next week.
Them pesky fires.
Fires.
What's the date?
Don't know the postponement date yet. It is in December. Yeah. It's going to be chilly. One of the things to remember about that ride is to know your level of experience and dress appropriately for the ride. It will be probably in the 40s or 30s when you get up there, 6,000 plus feet of climbing. So. Yeah, doing hills now. Get prepared.
I feel like I got a reprieve because I was going to do it, and I didn't really train hill. In fact, I got away from hills the last couple months, so I'm looking forward to working my way.
I've been doing lots of downhills. Yeah. That counts, right? Okay, let's bring this back to...
I want to thank Eric for helping us drink the Kool-Aid, the bike Kool-Aid.
Whoa, dude, you brought...
You got to serve some more Kool-Aid out for
those
of you.
Yeah, man, I'm tripping out on that stuff.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. And, you know, I'm going to go put this thing on our theme song, Bicycle Race by Queen, unless anybody has a better theme song. And then I'm going to play, for those of us who still want to listen to the Taco Ride story by Solar Owl after that. So it'll be the official end of the show, but... Thanks, guys.
I want to ride my bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
You say black.
I say white.
You say bar.
I say bite.
You say shark.
I say him, man. George was never my scene, and I don't like Star Wars.
You say Rose.
I say Royce.
You say God.
Give me a choice.
You say Lord.
I say Christ. I don't believe in Peter Pan, Frankenstein, or Superman.
All I wanna do is bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my
bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my bicycle. To ride my bike, I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my
bicycle. Races are coming your way,
so forget all your duties. Oh, yeah,
all the girls, they'll be riding today.
So look out for those beauties. Oh, yeah,
on your marks, get set, go.
She said she was going to the pawn shop.
just across her track. She started packing some clothes in a hurry, and then she said she would be right back. But I ain't seen her, I have my baby, since that day. Well, I ain't seen her, I have my baby, since she went away. I remember so well when she slammed the door, but the girl didn't make it back. No, oh, I ain't seen her, I have my baby, since that day. Well, I waited for her 24 hours, and I was just about to start that day. It didn't look like she was coming back, so I had to look out for myself. Well, I called the police department to find out what they knew. They said, no, by heck, but we will get her yet, because they were looking for her.
You know what, I think they had to stop the ride before, you know, too many people were asking.
I don't know, I think it was like...
So here we are after a bike ride to Crete Master.
And Cinder's Rockies was something else. Like,
what,
everybody
what
wanted to continue that except for Charlie.
Yeah,
well, have you ever put together a ride? A ride is actually a lot of work.
Yeah, I'd rather be on the ride instead
How
of
hard
the
is
ride.
It to connect the dots on the...
Oh, no, no, no. It's a lot of work. Anyway... We're discussing here some of the adventures on...
Like, if it has a concept, if it, there's, like, all this stuff to it, like, ride arc...
What's in a ride?
I mean, I didn't put any concept to this ride today except ice cream because it reminded me of those girls, those hair thingies.
Well, but that's conceptual. We actually had a starting point that had to do with the ride. Imagine if we weren't nowhere near that ride. Anyway... We went to the Crete Master ride, had ice cream before, delish over at Scoops, and then rode over to LACMA.
And that was the first ride where there was no women on the ride, and the ride started at Scoops.
Well, wait a second. You are a woman. You qualify.
Oh, yeah. Wait a second.
You actually made the ratio there. It's like 4-1.
Which is pretty much how bike rides go.
Yeah.
Anyway. On the ride, we have informal discussions because you can do that. If we were all in separate cars, we couldn't talk to each other unless we were on cell phones.
That's the huge dynamic with bicycles that the city doesn't understand that happens on the road. I think I'm going to talk about that tomorrow on Friday. I'm going to get it. My 2 minutes is going to be about that.
2 minutes. That's right. This week, there's going to be, what is it, a transpo meeting all dedicated to bikes at the
city council.
1 o'clock. Friday.
Wait a second. It's dedicated to bikes?
Yeah.
Dedicated to bikes.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, guys, this will be past tense by the time we...
No, they have it like...
Can we diagram this for all those people with time machines? So people with time machines will be able to get
You can get ready for the next one.
Yes.
We'll be more organized by then because we have to be.
Yeah. Exactly.
So anyway, that being said, our cohort here, Al, had a very... provocative story.
Tuesday, and I think that ride's so hipster because I've never gone on it, but they keep saying on there only 100 rides.
Hip,
to come on the ride before it ends. Like it's Mickey Mouse's birthday or something.
Yes. Well, anyway, Al was telling us a story. Al, tell us the story.
Okay, so anyway, it was my first time on Taco Tuesday. These guys meet up at Crank Mob Park. And the reason why I joined them was because two things. They were...
Crank Mob Park?
Yeah, Crank Mob Park is on Venice Boulevard. Yeah, it's mostly like West Side people.
Is it fast?
No, not really. No, it's not fast. It's not slow, but it's not fast. And there was maybe about... We started out with maybe about... I have a hard time guessing. Maybe about 40. I'd say somewhere around 40. And... We were heading, the reason why I joined was because two things. They were heading towards downtown from where they start, and there was also like the skaters happening last night, or Tuesday too. And that was, you know, a few skaters from Midnight Riders, you know, getting together downtown and just skating around.
Skaters going Midnight Riders?
Oh, yeah. There was a few Midnight Riders.
Were they,
you know,
were they quads or were they inline skates?
No, we're talking about like skateboards.
Oh, skaters.
Yeah, yeah. What do they call them, skaters or skateboarders? Sorry, I'm not hip. anyway, it was skateboarders down there.
Rasters.
And so we did mostly the route going on Venice Boulevard to downtown, rode around downtown, made a couple of stops, you know, beer stops, stuff like that. Then we met up at the Caltrans building on Main. It's on Main, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We met up over there with the skaters, and we hung out there for, like, you know, 15, 20 minutes, drinking, bullshit, and stuff like that, listening to music. And then we started up, we started back up, we hit the road, and we're heading towards Chinatown. And we're a little spread out, but I was kind of somewhat in the front. And don't know what happened in the back, but some guy in a car, you know, was pissed off at a few riders, I think, or maybe one rider, I'm not sure. But he was pissed off at whatever they did. I don't know what they did. Found out later on, you know, kind of the story, what set him off. But anyway,
you can tell us later what set him off.
What I saw, I was kind of in the front. What I saw was a black car on the left-hand side. It was three lanes going one way, and he was in the fast lane, and he speeds up in front of everybody, and then he stops right there on the left-hand side, gets out of his car. He's got a knife in his hand, you know, and it's like people are rolling up to him. People, I guess, don't see the knife and shit, you know.
What, was it like one of them knives from, like...
It was a buck knife with a fairly short blade, like about a three-inch long blade.
Not one of them, like...
No, no.
Friday the 13th kind of...
Yeah, like, no Davy Crockett, you know, knife or anything like that. Or that alligator Dundee or whatever that is.
That's
annoying. That's annoying. But he's standing out in the middle of the street. He said, "Who the fuck did that? Who did that?"
Wow.
You know, and it's like people are riding by him, and he's fucking pushing people off the bike and stuff.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he pushed Franz. Some of these people were riding fixies, so they weren't really, like, you know, stopping all that fast. And plus, some of them didn't know what the hell was going on, and so they didn't really, like, slow down. I stopped in front of them. A few other people did when they were rolling up, you know, and I said, "Hey, the guy's got a knife." And it was a black dude that was pretty big, man. He was like about 6'4", 6'5". And when they pushed Franz, I thought he stabbed him, but he didn't.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then I didn't see Lewis get pushed over, but Lewis got pushed over too. And then by that time, you know, people were stopped, and, you know, it was like, hey, you know, people over there are saying, "What the fuck, what are you doing, man?" You know, it's like, you know, shit like that. And he's over here still saying, you know, it's like, "Hey, man, who hit my car? Who hit my car?" You know?
Oh, so he thought somebody hit his car?
I think that's what it, I'm not sure what happened.
Now, what kind of car was it?
It was a Mercedes. It was a big-ass Mercedes, and it was a fairly new car, you know? And so you know, we're over here trying to get him back in the car, man. It's like people had their bikes up against him, you know, kind of like pushing him and shit. And people are like keeping their distance, but still it's like nobody's going to, you know, bail and run away, you know. I mean, it's already everyone stopped and stuff. So it's a little bit of a... Oh, like I said, there's about 40 people, and at this point there's maybe about 30 at that point. And so, you know, like, they're, most of them are surrounding him.
Oh, thank you.
Most of them are surrounding him and everything. And so he gets, they convince him to get back into the car, you know. And in the meantime, while, you know, they're, because a couple of times he gets out of his car again, too, you know. And, at this point I said, you know, I'm calling 911. So I called 911 and I said, "Hey, you know, this guy's got a knife and he's threatening us. And we want police, we need some police support here." And the first thing I wanted to do was give him the license plate number, you know. So I gave him the license plate number a couple of times. You know, you have to do, I just gave him the license plate, like 2XJ3429, whatever. And then the second time it was 2X-ray, D David, C Charlie, you know, stuff like that. So anyway, I gave it to him a couple of times, and then I tried to explain where we were at, the streets we were on, and stuff like that. Fortunately, Eddie Gofez knows the streets well, so he was relaying us exactly where we were. And then then he goes and takes off. He was actually taking off when I was dialing 911. That was another reason why I wanted to get the license plate number real quick. And so he takes off. He's going up, what is that, Cesar Chavez. He makes a right on Cesar Chavez from Main Street. He was heading north. And he takes off, and the pack is maybe about 50 or 100 feet ahead of us. There's about three or four of us, you know, at the incident where it was where it happened. So, you know, those guys up ahead, they just said, screw it, man, let's go, let's, you know. And Lewis stays. Lewis is the one that has got pushed off. He stays. I'm staying just to give those guys support. Another guy, Ian, he stays because he saw some of the stuff that went on. The officer showed up fairly fast, and the guy that took the report seemed pretty genuinely, you know, concerned about it. You know, he wasn't, you know, rolling his eyes or anything like that. He gets a report. He's doing a pretty good job of it. There's two units, four cops there.
Did the guy take off when he saw the cops coming?
Well, the guy took off before the cops even got there. You know, so he was gone. You know, so he was gone. And the guy Ian, he saw some of what was going on as far as, like, you know, the guy, you know, getting bumped. I guess what was happening was he was tailgating some riders, and some riders were behind him tailgating him, and I guess he hit his brakes or something like that, and then a bicyclist hit him in a bumper, you know. And I don't know if they, you know, hit the side of the car with his fist or anything like that. Ian didn't say anything about that. He just said, you know, it's like he saw, you know, this car, you know, tailgating the riders and stuff, you know. And probably, you know, some of the riders were on the side saying, hey, get, you know, back off, you know, or something like that, you know, yelling at him, right?
Yeah.